Right now, I'm very happy to welcome to our program Sarah Anderson. She's the director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies. Sarah's recent op-ed piece titled, "It's a Myth That Corporate Tax Cuts Mean More Jobs," was published in the August 30th edition of the New York Times. Sarah, it's great to have you back on the program. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Scott. It's great to be here.
So your op-ed piece is very welcome, and it revisits a chapter in economics that I think many Americans missed. It needs to be repeated often. So thank you so much for your research and making these very simple to understand in terms of the coming debate with Trump and the Republican Party, which controls Congress. They've set out a goal and their agenda this fall to pass tax reform and tax cuts. And I think in his very modest way, Donald Trump says his tax cut will be the largest in American or world history or some such nonsense. But we are confronted by a one-party state now that is trying to push tax cuts for the wealthiest sector of the country and the most profitable corporations. And the central rationale for that over many years for the Republicans and conservatives on tax policy is the so-called trickle-down theory, that tax cuts for the wealthy and large corporations will boost the economy and benefit everyone below them on the down the line in their individual jobs, and as you talk about, creating jobs for folks. Your research and many other economists' research in recent decades solidly debunks this trickle-down theory. And you begin your editorial, and I wonder if you'd start there, by providing an example of AT&T, that large communications company, and talking about tax rates and how they have or have not created jobs.
Yeah, thanks. So, yes, many people have looked at this question of whether slashing the corporate tax rate will be good for job creation. But our research is a little different in that we looked at specific companies that have already been paying next to nothing in federal income taxes. And AT&T jumped out as really an extreme example of a company that has been avoiding paying their fair share of taxes, using the tax savings not to create jobs. They've actually been slashing jobs, but putting a lot of it into executive compensation. So specifically, we looked at companies that were profitable every year over the period 2008 to 2015, and yet were paying less than 20, an effective tax rate of less than 20%. The official rate is 35%, and AT&T was actually paying only an 8% effective federal tax rate during that period. And what did they do with the tax savings? Well, instead of creating jobs, they laid off nearly 80,000 people. And their CEO, Randall Stephenson, has made quite a fortune during this period. And what amazed me is that he's out there very vocally promoting Trump's tax cut plan and bemoaning, you know, how burdensome the current tax code is and how much more competitive they could be if only they had to pay less taxes. And they're already paying next to nothing in taxes. So I think with these specific examples, it'll be even more clear to people that this is just a hoax, this idea that cutting the corporate tax rate will lead to more jobs.
Sarah, what do you make of the media coverage of this very narrow part of the debate where an advocate of cutting taxes for the wealthy and big corporations always tell us that the United States has the highest tax rate in the entire world, which sounds, you know, oh, my God, how could we be doing such a horrible thing to our corporate brothers and sisters? So how do you think that's generally handled by the hosts of these talk shows, particularly on cable news, where a lot of people get their information?
Yeah, they usually eat it right up. So I'm really appreciative of shows like yours where we get the chance to dispel some of these myths. The official corporate tax rate in the U.S. is 35% at the federal level, but the rate is meaningless because there are so many loopholes in the tax code that most big corporations don't pay anywhere near that. And so even though the rate might be high relative to a lot of other countries, the amount of revenue that our government gets from corporate taxes is lower than the average for industrialized countries. So that is another huge myth you're going to hear over and over again from President Trump, from House Speaker Ryan. It's another mantra of the Republican Party that our corporations are just, you know, being strangled by these high taxes that are so much higher than anywhere else in the world.
Thank you. We're speaking with Sarah Anderson tonight, director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, and we're talking about her recent op-ed piece titled, It's a Myth That Corporate Tax Cuts Mean More Jobs. And Sarah, your recent study at IPS looked at 92 publicly held U.S. corporations who are paying less than 20% of their earnings in federal taxes, and you took account of the loopholes that created these tax breaks and how their reduced tax load affected their ability to create jobs or not. Tell us about the sort of length and breadth of this study.
Yes. So as you mentioned, we looked at the 92 U.S. publicly held companies that had paid less than a 20% effective tax rate over a nine-year period from 2008 to 2015. And we were curious to see, were these the big job creators of the country? They should have been. Each one of them, by the way, this is important, they were profitable every single year during that nine-year period. So if the Republican mantra were true, that slashing the corporate tax burden would create all these jobs, well, these companies should have been the primary job creators in the country. And what we found was just the opposite. These companies that had been avoiding paying taxes had median job growth of negative 1% during this period compared to 6% growth for the U.S. private sector as a whole. So their job record was actually worse than at other companies. And what were they doing with all that money? Well, we didn't, claim to have completely answered that question, but we did find that they were paying their CEOs, these companies that were paying so little in taxes, they were paying their CEOs more. They were spending a lot of the money on buying back their stock, which artificially inflates the value of their stock, and the CEOs can also benefit from that because much of their pay is in some form of stock-based pay. So it's just a complete hoax that cutting the corporate tax rate would be good for workers. It would be good for CEOs, but we shouldn't think that it's going to be good for the rest of us.
Sarah, can you go into a little bit more detail about the stock buyback trend that's really sweeping corporate America for many years now? How does that work, and really, who are the beneficiaries, and what is the sleight of hand going on done in the interest of? In other words, it seems that this stock buyback scheme is really, in part, directed at fooling people as to where these profits are headed.
Yeah, thanks for asking, because this is not a widely publicized thing, but there is a huge trend of companies buying their own shares from the public markets using their own profits. And the buybacks serve the purpose of making a company's earnings look better without them having to actually be better. You're taking your shares off of the market, reducing the availability, and that drives up the value and the value of a company's stock price. And so, you know, one problem with that is it means that all the money they're spending on this financial maneuver to make their shares look better is money that's not being spent on building new factories or raising wages or hiring workers or growing the business. So it's really a very disturbing trend for a lot of investors, too, who see this as, you know, not about building value for the long term in the companies. It's artificially making them look good in the short term.
Could we compare it to three card Monte or what? What do you think?
It's a trick, you know. It's artificially manipulating your stock price, and it was illegal until I believe it was in I hesitate to say the exact date, but it was illegal for you know, most of our history, and many people think that it should be illegal once again.
So you can get arrested for three card Monte, but not this big scam here. That's right. Sad, but that's the state of our country lately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wanted to ask you a bit about offshore profits, because we've heard a lot of conservative and Republican members of Congress talk about how we have to have a tax holiday to bring back all these millions, billions, trillions of dollars that are stuck overseas because of our inordinately high tax rates. At least that's the excuse for these big companies like Apple and other big companies keeping their profits overseas in these tax havens. What can you tell us about the amounts of money that are overseas and this advocacy by some conservatives that a tax holiday should be declared to bring back these funds that will benefit Americans, quote unquote?
Right. Well, you're going to hear a lot about this also from Trump and Ryan saying, oh, these poor little companies have no choice but to keep their money overseas. It's trapped over there. It's stuck there because they couldn't possibly, because they only have to pay U.S. taxes on it if they bring it back to the U.S. It's called repatriation. It's shifting these offshore profits back to the U.S. And the reality is they could bring their money back anytime. They just don't want to have to pay taxes on it. You know, the rest of us have to pay taxes every year on everything they owe. But these multinational companies can defer indefinitely U.S. tax payments on money that they're stashing overseas. And so the argument by Trump and Ryan is that, well, let's give them a huge discount on how much they'll have to pay if they bring that money back to the U.S., and that'll be good for jobs. And it's just amazing because they did the same thing back in 2004, also based on the argument that it would create jobs if we gave these companies a break on taxes they owed on their foreign earnings. And what did they do? They turned around and cut jobs. So it's just amazing to me that we're hearing the same argument again. And what they want to do, too, is make it so that in the future they don't owe any profits on their foreign earnings. So it'll just be another incentive for companies to offshore their profits and offshore their, offshore jobs instead of investing in the United States.
And you write in your editorial that those profits that are stashed in overseas banks can actually be used to finance projects here in the United States as it stands right now, that these are fungible dollars over there.
Yeah, it's really a myth that the money's trapped overseas. They have full access to it. They could be using it to create jobs here now. And, you know, it's also worth mentioning that corporate profits are at a record high right now. It's not that they don't have the money to create jobs and that they have to have tax relief, you know, so-called tax relief in order to create jobs. They're already sitting on huge piles of profits. They're not choosing to use it for investments that are creating jobs.
And Sarah, I wanted to ask you, with the discussion we see now unfolding in Washington about tax reform and the need to create a fairer system, what are some of the proposals that you would recommend for genuine tax reform that would benefit the majority and not just the wealthiest 1% and the most profitable corporations?
Yeah, well, the focus should really be on closing up the loopholes that are currently allowing these big profitable corporations to get away with paying so little in taxes. And this whole, you know, game around hiding profits offshore is one that would, you know, raise tremendous amounts of revenue. And also even the playing field between these big multinational corporations that have the ability to hide their money in tax havens and domestic, you know, rooted companies and small businesses that don't have that option. So that would be a huge one, is to close the offshore tax shelter loophole. But I think we also need to look at additional ways to make sure that the wealthy and big corporations and Wall Street are paying their fair share. And the one that I decided to highlight in the New York Times op-ed is a small tax on Wall Street speculation, which at a very, very low rate that would really just target the real high flyers in the financial casino, the ones who are flipping stocks and making trades thousands of times a day, even a tax at a very small rate on each one of those trades of derivatives and so forth could really add up on these, you know, high-flying traders in the market, but have very little effect on ordinary folks and their pension funds or whatever investments they might have. And that would just be one way that I think we could make our system more fair. You know, it's amazing to think that ordinary Americans pay their taxes every year. They pay taxes when they buy a gallon of gasoline, and often if you buy basics like a new winter coat. But people who are trading millions of dollars in derivatives every minute don't pay any kind of sales tax when they're doing that kind of activity.
Sarah, I believe that Wall Street and stock transaction tax is often mm-hmm. referred to as the Robin Hood tax. Is that right?
Yeah, and it's really part of an international movement. Folks in the UK, I think, advanced the idea of a Robin Hood tax because it would really target the big time traders in the financial markets. And in Europe, there are a number of countries that have agreed to implement this kind of tax. They've been kind of dragging their feet on finalizing the agreement, but I'm still hopeful that they're going to move ahead in Europe. I think in the U.S., this is something that probably won't happen tomorrow, but there's a lot of energy and excitement around this because it is something that would be so clearly directed at people at the very top of the income ladder and could generate really massive revenue that could be put into much needed public investment in things like infrastructure, education, and healthcare.
So it'd be possible to earmark those funds that would be accrued from the Robin Hood tax to, as you said, fund infrastructure or education or any limited number of budget items, right? That sounds like that would be attractive, I think, to a lot of people.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Bernie Sanders talked about it a lot on the campaign trail, too, as, you know, a possible source of funding for free higher education. But it would raise enough money so that you could use it for that and more.
You know, I wanted to end on the question of public opinion because, you know, we've been talking about the trickle-down theory and the fact that, you know, hundreds of economists across the world have debunked this theory, as your own research has shown and highlighted in this editorial. But what do we know about public opinion? Are there a lot of people in the United States who believe cutting taxes on the wealthiest and these big corporations is going to benefit them somehow? Or have people grown a little cynical about that perpetual ploy we hear from the right, from conservatives, from Republicans?
Now, I think there really is support for this that goes quite a ways across the political spectrum. The Pew Research Center did a poll just in April of this year and found that 62% of Americans say they're bothered a lot by the feeling that some corporations don't pay their fair share of taxes. And 60% said the same about wealthy people not paying their fair share. So I do think that that there is potential here to build a movement for fair taxation and really the opposite of what we're seeing right now coming out of the Republican leadership in Washington. But I also have to say, I think that this is going to be a really intense fight heating up this fall, that the president is out there saying that, Hurricane Harvey means we need to accelerate tax reform. Like, they are really using every argument they can to get this through. And so I just encourage everybody to get involved in this fight.
Yeah. And I'm sure the Pew poll probably also showed there's a lot of people who are strongly suspicious that their own president hasn't paid much in taxes. The guy who won't release his tax returns.
Exactly. Yeah, he and his family would benefit tremendously from this. I haven't mentioned that it would his tax plan would eliminate the estate tax. And so all of his heirs could look forward to not having to pay the estate tax, which, hits very few Americans, but the Trump family would definitely be in that boat. And so, yeah, it's really pretty disgusting to see him. He's now going around the country giving speeches on his tax plan and presenting it as a patriotic thing that is going to help all Americans, and that is really a hoax.
Sarah, I as the last thing to discuss here, I wanted to mention this. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York and Nancy Pelosi, the minority leader in the House from California, struck a deal with Donald Trump last week revolving around hurricane aid for the victims in Texas of Hurricane Harvey, as well as extending the debt ceiling for three additional months. There was some static about that, thinking that this, on the one hand, could weaken the Democrats' hand down the line. There was also some speculation on the right that the Democrats have additional leverage now where they may be at some advantage in preventing a gross giveaway to the richest people in the country with a tax break that would be coming through Congress. What do you think? Does this deal cut between Trump, Schumer, and Pelosi mean anything, you think, for tax policy in the next bunch of weeks?
Well, the analysis that I've been reading by people who, really understand all of the sausage making that goes on with legislation in Congress is that it could help prevent the Republicans a win on tax reform just by gumming up the schedule, filling up the legislative schedule towards the end of the year, because as you mentioned, it's only a temporary fix with the debt ceiling, so it kicked the can down the road until December, which means that they'll have to deal with that then, and there's a lot of other things on the schedule, so it's a tight window for them to get their tax cuts through, but boy, are they motivated. The GOP really needs a big win, and this is an issue where I think they feel like they can not only unify Republicans, but possibly even bring over some Democrats who might also fall for this line that tax cuts are going to be good for workers. So, I hesitate to predict anything, but I don't think we should rule out the chances that they could get this through.
Well, thank you, Sarah. We're out of time. Love to have you back to talk more about this issue, and it's not going away anytime soon. But people, as you said, should educate themselves and get involved and get active on this issue as their representatives are going to be voting on some form of tax plan down the road.
If I could just give a little plug for a great coalition that we're members of, Americans for Tax Fairness. They have tremendous fact sheets and talking points and really great resources on their website, and that's Americans for Tax Fairness.
And you want to give your own website out and the report that maybe goes more in depth on some of the research you've done on tax policy.
Yeah, absolutely. So I work for the Institute for Policy Studies, and one thing your readers might be interested in is our website, inequality.org, where you'll find this report and a lot of other related information about the rising inequality in our country.
Sarah, real pleasure. Thank you for being here with us tonight.
All right. Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Sarah Anderson, director of the Global Economy Project at the Institute for Policy Studies.